On May 8th, Mecklenburg voters will take to the polls to elect a sheriff. And one of the biggest issues up for debate is 287G. That's a program that allows Mecklenburg sheriff's deputies to work with federal immigration officials to screen and detain inmates. WFAE's FAQ City podcast wants to know, what questions do you have about 287G and immigration and deportation policies in the Charlotte region? Submit your questions now on WFAE.org. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Don't look now, but you're living in one of the hottest housing markets in the country. In the last year alone, Charlotte home prices rose by an average of 13%. Inventories are low. Home builders are focusing on luxury and move-up homes. So first-time buyers are having a tough time finding homes to buy, even as rents that they may be trying to get away from continue to go up. That despite an ever-increasing supply of new apartment units and a lot of vacant apartments uptown. So how long can all this last? What does it mean for you if you're a homeowner, a home buyer, or a seller? We take a look at that this hour with several people, and we begin with Jason Gentry. He's a realtor broker with Premier Sotheby's International and this year's president of the Charlotte Regional Realtor Association. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
Nice to have you here. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. You can also watch us on Facebook Live. I was going to say, Jason, that we've seen this before, prior to the Great Recession. High rents, high home prices, low inventories, seller's market. But is that true? Because we've been tight, but is this something different?
This is something totally different.
Why?
We are abnormally tight. I think the big difference this time is sellers aren't selling anymore. Sellers aren't coming to the marketplace. And we think that's for a multitude of reasons. People aren't choosing to downsize. I think the recession caused some of that. Some folks remodeled and they're staying in their homes longer than they ever have.
Which means that for realtors, this is not a good thing. You're not doing the business that you could do and making the commissions that you could make on these high home prices because there's nothing out there to sell.
We're starting to get a little bit worried, yeah.
How bad is it?
So in Charlotte, we're looking at less than 2 months of inventory, meaning if nothing new got listed in 2 months, everything would be gone.
Wow. Are we unusual? Or is this happening everywhere in North Carolina or in the region, in the South, or all over the country?
I think we are one of the hot spots right now for sure. This is happening across the country in the more desired markets where jobs are being created, right? I mean, it's all job driven.
So is this a bubble or is this based on some sort of sound fundamental in your professional opinion?
You know, we used to talk about 6 months of inventory being kind of normal. Mm-hmm. We don't think there's a normal right now, right? We don't know what the new normal is going to be. So is it a bubble? I don't think it's a bubble. I think we're going to equalize in the future. I think we're going to get more inventory coming to the marketplace, but that's probably not 2018 or 2019. It could be 2020.
There are probably a lot of reasons why buyers, or sellers rather, don't want to put their home on the market in this market, even though prices have gone up in the last year alone, as I said, 13%. That's a lot of money.
Right.
So why are they not looking at that and saying, they used to consider their houses a piggy bank, so why aren't they saying, rats, let's get out of here. Let's sell this thing.
Because they have nowhere to go. With low inventory, you know, we start showing them, here's your options, and gosh, nothing is appealing to them right now. So they decide to stay put, and that creates that issue. You know, we also are dealing with folks that are still from that 07 time frame that they haven't recouped the cost that they may have lost in the marketplace. You know,
so
the
they're still upside down
they
in
could
some
be.
Cases?
Absolutely. It's very, very market-driven, neighborhood-specific. So it really depends on where you're located.
Well, that begs this question then. If the fall of the Great Recession caused people to lose value in their homes, sometimes the home isn't worth what the mortgage is worth, and they still haven't recovered from that, if prices are rising so quickly and so high, could the same be true of people who buy a house in this environment when if they turn around 5 years from now and they still haven't had any appreciation or things have declined and they too become upside down? Is that possible?
Of course, it's possible.
For a realtor, you're a very honest guy.
We would love to have a crystal ball with all of this stuff, but it just doesn't work that way. You know, the reality is, you know, people make home ownership decisions for a multitude of reasons. You know, job relocation, providing stability for their family. There's just so many different factors that go into home ownership. So there's no one size fits everyone. It just doesn't work that way.
So if prices are up 13%, put that number into perspective. What's normal for prices to go up year to year?
That's a great question. You know, I'd say it's probably somewhere in that 2-3% range is pretty steady and typical for the Charlotte marketplace specifically. But every market is different, and there's different factors that create that demand.
Which parts of town seem to be the hottest parts of town if you want to be a seller at the moment?
Yeah, you know, we have a tough time talking about hot neighborhoods. It's not a great place to necessarily go conversation-wise, right?
Because why?
As a buyer, what's hot to you may not be hot to the other person. You might be looking for a 5-bedroom suburban home, mm-hmm. and that might be what's hot for you. Somebody else might be okay with a 900-square-foot bungalow because they want proximity to uptown. Mm-hmm. They're living more of that millennial lifestyle. They want to be close to the breweries. So, you know, what is a hot neighborhood to someone is not necessarily to someone else.
But let me change the way the question was asked.
Okay.
What are the neighborhoods that seem to be offering the most in terms of the number of houses available to sell, bringing in a good price?
Well, if we're talking new construction, you know, that's going to be further away from uptown. You know, we're seeing a lot of new construction in Gaston and Lincoln counties. We're seeing a lot of new construction across the border in South Carolina, Fort Mill, Rock Hill. And if you're looking to be a first-time home buyer, you know, you're really going to be looking hard at those areas because that's where you're going to get $200,000 price ranges. But, you know, inner city neighborhoods have always done really well. Dilworth, Eastover, Myers Park, Plaza Midwood. We're seeing a lot of growth in the South End. People want to be near these breweries that are coming along. So there's really growth all across our region right now. It's kind of an interesting time to be a buyer and being deciding where you want to live. And then obviously school systems always play into that conversation.
What about price points? I've seen houses sit on the market in some areas literally for a year. And in this market, to me, that is astounding. And from the outside, there's nothing wrong with these houses, and they're in good locations, but they're sitting there. So what price points seem to be the ones that move the fastest, let's put it that way?
Yeah, $300,000 and below, that's when you're going to see multiple offers quite frequently right now. Mm-hmm. If you're a buyer, you know, if you're going after a property, lowballing is not the game to play right now. You want to submit your highest and best offer at that price point range. You're one shot. That's really all you're probably going to get. So once you start pushing, I would say $400,000-$600,000, you know, you can start playing a little bit of those games again with going in a little low, maybe not crazy low. And again, it's neighborhood specific. So that's where you really got to get engaged with your realtor, mm-hmm. and find out what the history of that neighborhood is. Is it a new listing? Are they getting a lot of showings? You need to know these things before you present that offer.
What do you get for $300,000? I know it depends on where you are, whether you're buying out in the suburbs, the far-flung suburbs, or you're in town, but what do you get? What's the average house at $300,000 going to offer you?
It's probably a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, pretty typical, you know, garage house. You're probably going to get about 1/4 acre of land. You know, it's not going to have a whole lot of upgrades to it. I wouldn't say bare bones, because the builders are getting a lot more interesting in what they're offering to appeal to the consumers.
Meaning what?
Upgrades
butler,
in terms
butler
of
pantries and what do you call it? Stuff in the dining room, the stuff on the wall. What's it called?
What I like to call this stuff is the HGTV factor.
Okay, yes.
Barn doors.
Barn doors.
Things that don't necessarily cost a whole lot.
Right.
But everybody's seeing it on television right now, and everybody wants these things.
Mm-hmm. Got to have the coffered ceiling. You got to have the kitchen island.
Maybe some of those things, maybe
what,
not.
What if you don't have that? What if it's a resale? It was built in the 1990s, 80s, even early 2000s, and suddenly these open floor plans took over with kitchen islands connected to eat-in areas, connected to the family room. It's all one big room.
Right.
It's cheaper to build,
right?
But people like it.
Yeah.
But in the 90s, they weren't building like that. So you got a fundamentally new house on your hands, but it doesn't have any of those features. Are they selling?
Absolutely, they're selling. If we look at neighborhoods like Madison Park, very desirable neighborhood to be in. You know, those were built in the 40s. But people are going in remodeling these homes because they're in areas of Charlotte that they want to live in.
Okay. The word I was looking for, according to my producer, is shiplap, but I don't think you can say that on the radio. What's the future of realtors? Because I keep seeing these ads on television, and I forget the name of the company now, but essentially it looks like you put your offer in on your app on the phone, and in one day they will sell your house or they'll find you a house to buy, and it doesn't look like it requires much of a realtor. What's up with that?
I think that is younger generations who think they can do everything.
Mm-hmm. On their phones.
On their phones, their devices. I don't think so. I think having an advocate on your side during the real estate process is pretty important. There's so many different hats. We just released a new marketing campaign. We're negotiators, right? We're advocates for you. We're concierge services. We are connecting you with our network of all of our different people that we worked with over the years. So we know who the right people are to go to.
Talk to me about that. Are you working for me? If I'm a buyer, are you working for me or are you working for the seller or are you working to get the highest price so you get the most commission? I hate to be a bad guy here, but who are you really working for?
So I have a code of ethics that we subscribe to, right? And if the realtor's playing the game like they're supposed to play the game, we are absolutely 100% your advocate the entire transaction. We are always on your side. Now, you can have dual agency, right? I can be representing both the buyer and the seller in the transaction. And in that situation, I have to be impartial. You know, I can't play a favorite to either one of you. So that happens occasionally, not very frequently. And we actually discourage it in my company. It's something that we don't feel like is a fair way to play. We really do try to be as ethical and your advocate as much as we possibly can.
Let's go back to these price increases that we're experiencing here. Charlotte Magazine reports that one house in Plaza Midwood experienced a 71% price increase in 6 years. The Realtors Association reports the median price of homes has increased by 52% in 5 years. Is this going on only in Mecklenburg County, only in Charlotte, or is it happening in Gaston County, in York County, and Union County, and Cabarrus counties?
Yeah, it's happening all over our marketplace, and I think that's just a factor of, you know, people are having to move further and further out to get the price points that they want to get to be a part of the activity and growth that's happening in Charlotte. So, you know, these are bedroom communities to Charlotte, literally, and folks are having to choose to live in these places. So, yeah, the price point increases are happening there as well.
So we have 44 people, we are told, constantly moving to Charlotte every single day. Yeah. They're helping to drive up these prices. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, and that's why we're seeing the apartment construction boom in Charlotte as well, right? And there's got to be all kinds of different product that we have to offer to appeal to all of these folks that are moving here.
You said earlier in this conversation that baby boomers, and I've forgotten exactly, I think you said trading down. They're not trading down anymore. What does that mean? They're not downsizing when the kids move out? They're just
Correct.
Sticking with what they got?
Correct. Yeah, I think a lot of that was fueled by the recession. Folks decided to remodel their homes, maybe add that ground floor master bedroom suite that they always wanted, and that's giving them more longevity. I think health is better than it's ever been in this country, right? So we have a lot more alternative ways of living that really are allowing us to stick longer in the house that we purchased that may be too big for us. We may not want to maintain this thing anymore, mm-hmm. but when we look at the inventory that's available, you know, I dealt with this recently with a client, and they just can't find what they're looking for right now, so they stick tight. They wait it out.
So if you are, you've said that if you're a buyer, now is not the time to try to get the price down and really haggle over a lot of different things. Sellers are calling the shots. Can they refuse, for instance, to do a repair? You take it as it is or don't take it? Can they
Absolutely.
Do that?
Absolutely, especially if a seller gets five offers. What's their incentive? They know if this one doesn't work out, they can go to the next one. Now, I tend to have the conversation of finding the balance there, right? If it's something quirky that we can get done in 5 minutes, let's go ahead and take care of that. If we're talking about replacing the entire HVAC, maybe you don't have to.
Yeah.
So you're always striking a balance.
If I understood what I read about you correctly, you say that despite the tight market, that sellers should consider offering an incentive. Did you say that? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay, stop right there. You said yes. So we'll come back and we'll talk about that. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk about why you said that in light of what you just said. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Jason Gentry. He's president realtor-broker of the Charlotte Regional Realtors Association and also with Premier Sotheby's International. And just prior to the break, we were talking about how this is a seller's market. And because many times they get multiple offers, they really don't have to do a lot of negotiating. And they don't really have to do things that maybe a buyer would want them to do in a different style market. Because if you don't buy it, that's fine. Somebody else will buy it tomorrow. But you have said, despite the tight market, that sellers should consider offering an incentive. What kinds of incentives? And given what you just said prior to the break, why?
So that's actually a Realtor.com stat. Aha! I think it's 39% of sellers offered some type of incentive, you know? And I think what that's really talking about is maybe you have a house that doesn't have that new master bath or that new kitchen or the new countertops that everybody's craving, mm-hmm. and you offer some type of incentive. There's an allowance in there. We'll give you $10,000 in credit money to replace the countertops. You know it's an issue that's going to prevent your house from selling over the one beside of you because that is the updated one. So you're trying to let the buyer pick what they want to put in the house as an incentive.
It's a different market than it was 10 years ago in so many different ways. And you just mentioned Realtor.com. I'm curious as to what websites like Realtor.com and Zillow, and I know that the Charlotte Regional Realtor Association really hates Zillow. If I'm not mistaken, you cut them off in Charlotte, which makes them even less accurate than they were before because they can't get information. So how has that impacted your business and the process of buying and selling a house?
I would say it hasn't impacted my business at all. You know, I definitely get sellers once in a while that want
you're
to know.
You're Premier Sotheby's. I mean, that's a pretty high-end thing that you're
concentrating. We represent all price points, but yeah, we do offer special stuff for the higher price listings. That's kind of where our specialty is.
Right.
But Zillow is getting our data feed. It's really based on the brokerage community. They get to decide if they syndicate to Zillow or not. Mm-hmm. We've just been in a place as an MLS where we haven't been comfortable signing the contract that Zillow's asking us to sign. And we feel strongly we have to represent our brokerage community to the best ability we can.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious as to how it has impacted you guys, because it seems to me that if I can go on Zillow or Realtor.com or even on your website, which I've done many times, mm-hmm. and just looked at houses, I can tell right from the website, I don't want to see that house. Or maybe I do want to see that house, and I would never have given it a second thought. How has it affected you? Because buyers now know, it's like a car dealership. People go into the car dealership knowing everything about the car and what the dealer paid for it. So that kind of changes the negotiating equation.
I think the only thing that's changed is buyers may wait a little bit longer before they contact a realtor. I think when you have that initial consultation with them, they think they know everything that they want, and you quickly find out that they don't really. What a buyer tells me that they want in the first 5 minutes of meeting them is never what they buy.
Really?
Absolutely.
Why is that? Why are we so unaware?
Well, I think when you start getting into the specifics of price, for example, right? Everybody wants the HGTV house, but mm-hmm. can they afford it in the neighborhood that they want to live in?
So this is like House Hunters, where they take the buyer comes in.
This is nothing like House Hunters.
This is what I want. They take you and they show you the house, and you go, yes, this is it. This is it. And then they say, well, this is $1.5 million, and you can only afford $250,000. And then they get more realistic. Is that what's going on here, essentially?
There's a little bit of truth with that analogy. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just an interesting time to be a buyer right now. And, you know, I think the television is really affecting buyers and what their wish lists are and what they think they're supposed to get. If you want a deal in Charlotte, there's still deals in Charlotte. But that might mean you're buying a fixer-upper. But that's okay.
Yeah.
You can get equity that way in a property.
So first-time buyers used to, before the recession, home builders, and there were scads of home builders here, were building starter homes and second move-up homes faster than you could even. I mean, you'd blink and there'd be a neighborhood in a field. That's not happening anymore. Is that because they're more reluctant to put the money forward because they're not sure they'll get buyers? They're not building first-time homes. They're building more luxury or move-up product. Is that because – why is that?
I think it's a combination of things. You know, I think a lot of those single-family home builders went into the multifamily business for a while with all these apartment buildings that are being built, right? Mm-hmm. I think in Charlotte we're going to start seeing some of that construction die off and people will return to single-family construction.
Most buyers want new construction, or do they want something that's been loved and well-worn and it's cozy feeling and it's in an established neighborhood?
Both. Buyers want all the above.
You're slippery.
Well, that's what makes both inventories sell, right? I mean, some people want to be in that established neighborhood that's been there for a long time and they love the charm of Plaza Midwood, right? Huh. And then some folks want that brand new kitchen. So all buyers are different. They want different things.
One of the tips that you have for buyers, I understand, and I hope this comes from you and not Realtor.com, is don't wait. Is that you saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely say don't wait.
Why?
You know,
is there a better deal coming around the corner tomorrow? If you miss out on this one, there's something else coming.
Buyers tend to think that more inventory in that spring market gives them more options.
Okay.
But there's also a lot more buyers thinking that way. So maybe if you're ahead of the market, you're not competing with 10 offers. Maybe you're only competing with one other offer. It's giving you more flexibility in your purchasing process than waiting for that hot market where everybody's trying to find something.
But spring is here, so is it too late? I mean, because spring is here, let's be honest. The trees are blooming.
Yeah, April to June is really what we call that hot market. But, you know, I think we still got a little time to play before we're hot. Yeah, you're a little late to the game.
We may talk about this again with one of our other guests, which I'm about to bring onto the program here, but interest rates are rising. They just rose, I think, last week, and the Fed has promised to raise them two more times at least this year. At one point, mortgage interest rates were in the high twos and low threes, and now they're where?
We're expecting them to hit around 5% by the end of the year.
And that does a lot of damage to people who are on a tight budget. I mean, that really changes the equation about what you can afford. So is it possible, before they rise again, to lock in an interest rate before you've chosen the house?
I'm not aware of a way to do it before you choose the house, but I just had someone who's under contract on a new construction townhouse, uh-huh. And we just locked his rate, and he's still another 4 months out before the house is finished. You've got to be careful and know the specifics of what that rate lock means. If you don't meet a construction deadline, that could cause that interest rate to go up, and you have to pay fees or points. Mm-hmm. So you really have to talk to your lender and know what you're locking yourself into.
Jason Gentry is with Premier Sotheby's. He is a realtor broker there, and he's also the president of the Charlotte Regional Realtors Association. You have houses to sell and meetings to go to, so I have to let you go. But thank you for joining us here this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Let me add some folks with different areas of expertise and different points of view, or maybe similar points of view, to this discussion on Charlotte's red-hot housing market. Jennifer Gooch is the regional director of Charlotte Metro Study. They survey and analyze residential construction, real estate, and the housing market. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Morning. And Eli Portillo is back. He follows all of this, as well as the burgeoning apartment market for the Charlotte Observer. Good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
What is Metro Study? What do you look at? What is that all about?
So we started about 30 years ago in Houston, and it was literally two guys who had the idea to go around and survey all of the actively building subdivisions and then sell that data back to builders. So we track vacant developed lots, future pipelines, anything going through zoning or entitlements with municipalities. We also track price ranges. And pretty much we have clients who are builders, bankers, Harris Teeter, who wants to know how many, you know, homes are coming into this area. Is it viable to build a Harris Teeter here as a client?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much if it has to do with single family residential construction, we're going to know your pipeline, what's on the ground, what's coming, and what price point it's selling at.
You're the Cambridge Analytica of real estate. The National Association of Realtors says that it expects inventory demand to be relieved as builders begin to fill the growing demand for new construction and for single-family homes as opposed to the scads of apartments that are going up. But are the same Jason just said that a lot of these single-family home builders got into the apartment business, and that's why they're not building new construction for starter homes. How many builders are doing that? How many builders that we would know the names of have been doing that as opposed to building what they're known for?
Well, I think you can see a few prominent examples in Charlotte. Probably the biggest one that comes immediately to mind is Crescent Communities, which back in the early 2000s was developing a lot of luxury, big, single-family places like a Sanctuary by the lake, and now is really aggressive in the apartment market here, building, I believe, more than 2,000 apartment units in Charlotte, and that's really become a huge focus of theirs. They're doing some single-family, I believe Mason's Bend and Fort Mill, for example, but they've really shifted heavily to focus on multifamily. And there's a record building boom in multifamily. And what that means is not just builders doing that, but also contractors, workers, the competition for labor, the cost to build a house goes up as well, because you've got people who, you know, were contractors, skilled laborers who are now building hundreds and hundreds of apartment units instead of hundreds and hundreds of single-family houses. So it doesn't just tighten up that market from the builder perspective, but single-family home builders have to compete even more for that labor and those goods.
We've been growing so fast with people coming in and buildings going up, and particularly apartments and condos, and mostly apartments and some townhome developments, but also prior to the recession, all these neighborhoods that came out of nowhere overnight, and they were just sprawled all over the place. Is land, do we have enough land, or has the inventory of available land become tough for builders?
I think the price has become what's the issue. So residential land in the Southeast last year appreciated at 5%. This year it's projected to appreciate at 4%. So definitely in Mecklenburg County, it's harder to assemble large acreage plots to build on. But when you get out into Union County, you know, Fort Mill area, Lancaster, Gaston County, the land's there. It's just, can you buy it at a price point where you can build on it? So you need to develop a lot for around $30,000 to $40,000 in order to build a $250,000 house.
But if you're a young person, we keep hearing these stories. I don't know whether they're true or not, but millennials don't want to drive cars. We are told that we are told they want to live near the breweries. He just told us that, which means along the Lynx Blue Line, which doesn't go anywhere. I mean, it goes to the university, it goes to Pineville. That's that, you know, if you don't want to live any, if you want to live that near that, you can't use the train. But we're told that they want to be in town, they want to be near their friends, they want to have be able to walk to things. If they want to buy a house, they're going to have to change those expectations, aren't they? Meaning they're going to have to move to a Union County in some cases, because the price of, won't allow them to buy anything closer in.
Well, as the resident millennial right here, I can say we definitely do want to live near breweries, and a lot of us don't want to drive cars, but of course that's not 100% true. A lot of folks I know are aging into houses, so to speak, getting married, having kids.
So they're changing expectations.
So I think the idea that millennials are a completely different generation has been somewhat overplayed. You know, long-term millennials look at dollars and cents and can make the same decisions about owning a home. But I do think there is something to how long people are willing to put off home ownership in order to have more years in those in-town places.
And carefree.
Yes.
Having a house is a problem for a lot of people.
Yes. And, you know, this is purely anecdotal, but, you know, I myself and other people I know are more willing to, you know, rent somewhere in a cool neighborhood, so to speak. And maybe in the back of your mind, you think, well, someday I'll move out to the Ballantyne or Union County, but not right now. And I think that expectation of when you'll make that move has probably shifted culturally.
And then you look at the new census data that came out recently. Mecklenburg County, for the first time in a decade, was not on the top 10 fastest-growing counties
in
North Carolina.
Yes, I saw that.
It was Cabarrus that came in at number 4 and Union that came in at number 10.
Shocking.
Yes.
And the only good part of that is that Wake County wasn't on the list either, right? Raleigh?
Nope.
Yes. But I do think it's important to note that even though we're not growing that fast percentage-wise as we once were, we still added almost 20,000 people last year in Mecklenburg County, and that's a lot of new apartments and houses.
So what is driving all this apartment building? I mean, it's gotten out of hand. No, seriously, what is driving it?
Well, I think the biggest single factor is that population growth. When you have almost 20,000 people moving to an area, a lot of those people are going to be renting to start if you assume they're relocating for a job or for a new schooling opportunity. So that's a lot of houses and apartments. And the other thing is the apartment market is still at very low vacancy rates. More than 9 out of every 10 apartments in Charlotte are full. So that means if we didn't have this construction, we would be approaching a 0% vacancy rate very quickly with the population influx. So we're building a lot of apartments, but a lot of people are moving here, and that's keeping vacancy rates low, although they're starting to creep up a little bit.
It makes sense. When you move to a new city, it makes sense to rent till you learn the city and figure out where you really like to live for the long haul. So that's probably fueling some of this. But how much of it is also psychological? Because millennials have different expectations and really don't want to be saddled with having to do yard work in many cases. How much of it is due to the fact that millennials saw what happened to homeowners in the downturn and don't want that to happen to them? So they just as soon be in a brand new, spanking, fresh luxury apartment, whatever that means, and deal with the rent.
Well, I think that everybody ages as you age, as you have kids, as you form a household, kind of the realities of the situation take hold where, you know, you're going to want that yard and you're going to want to be in an A-plus school district. And those things are in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to see a lot more urban cores popping up around Charlotte. So you see Waverly down in Union County, Burkdale Village in Huntersville. The River District will be one where people can live in the periphery of those places out in the suburbs and still have a reasonable commute.
Do you view the places you just talked about as being more new urbanistic or simply as far-flung suburbs where we've had those since the 1950s, where you have a house with a picket fence in the yard and you get in the car and you drive to the grocery store and you come back, you drive to the movie theater and come back? Or are these going to be different? Brookdale, it's a live, work, play place. Mm-hmm.
And I find that that's where we're going. So the new urbanization of live, work, play, you know, everywhere has a 5-foot sidewalk, there's tree save, it's pedestrian friendly, your townhomes are alley loaded, so you don't have a driveway going in. And those are the types of places where I find millennials are really looking to live and want to live. But again, it's a suburban revitalization. The census data proves it. And it's kind of what we're seeing across Charlotte. You know, there's only so much land that Charlotte has. So unless we increase our density in Mecklenburg County, which we could through townhomes and through high rises.
And which we are doing.
Yes. Then, you know, the only other option is out.
Do you see a tapering off of all these apartments, or do you see a change in style because they all look the same?
Well, I've been waiting for the apartment boom and watching for it to taper off for a few years now, and it just seems to keep going. Right now, we're at a place where there's about 27,000 apartments in Charlotte, either planned or under construction. And the developers and builders I talk to are still looking to build more. So it doesn't show any signs of stopping yet.
Eli Portillo is with the Charlotte Observer. Jennifer Gooch is regional director with Charlotte Metro Study. We're going to continue talking about the Charlotte housing market, and that includes apartments, but we'll get back to single family as well when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Charlotte's hot real estate market, although we're not in the top 10 in the state for some reason. That's amazing to me. But we're growing by leaps and bounds, and the housing market is tighter than it's ever been, and prices are going up, so it's a seller's market. Jennifer Gooch is here. She's regional director of Charlotte Metro Study. They supply statistics about all of this to various entities, from home builders to retailers to planners who want to know where they need to put their next big box or whatever it is. Eli Portillo is a business and development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Before we get back to houses, apartments are everywhere and they all look the same, although I'm told that by reading your columns that there is a move afoot to change some of the frontal elevations of all of this. I'm not sure why that is, but all of these apartments are marketing themselves as luxury apartments. What does that mean? I mean, it's wallboard and flooring. So what does that mean?
Well, it's a somewhat amorphous term, but there is a, classification by STARS. More than half of the apartments in Charlotte are 4- or 5-star properties, which means they have newest updated amenities. We're talking, you know, wine cellar, dog wash, pet spa, bike room.
A communal wine cellar or one in your apartment?
I've seen both.
Okay.
Both are in the Charlotte market. There are some that have individual wine fridges, and there are some that have communal wine rooms. Dog parks, all this stuff that's really tippy-top of the line is kind of what defines those luxury properties. And those are renting quickly as well. The average price for an apartment in Charlotte is up to about $1,000 and almost $150 a month. That's up 6% year over year. So you're seeing rent growth. What you're not seeing is tons of empty apartments and rent going down.
Yeah.
So that's one reason builders and developers are encouraged.
That sounds really high to me outside of a big city, and $1,000 plus for rent. And what do you get for that? Is it a one bedroom? Is it a two bedroom? Is it a studio? What is it?
So I believe this is the first year that in Charlotte we've had every single size apartment is now averaging over $1,000 that I've seen.
So why would I, since there's so many going up, and I know that the vacancy rate, at least in Uptown, is higher than one would anticipate, what would make me choose building A on one corner versus walking across the street to building B? If the rents are comparable, why would I choose one over the other?
Well, Uptown's kind of an interesting example.
And
not just Uptown. Sure.
Once you get outside the loop.
Yeah. Well, a lot of apartments in crowded markets like Uptown in particular are starting to offer concessions again. If you're renting an apartment in Uptown, the average rent is almost $1,900 a month. But because there are so many and because the vacancy rate is over 1 in 5 now in Uptown, yeah, developers are offering 1 to 2 months free at a lot of these properties. So that's one. You look like you're having an issue there with this price, by the way.
I mean, to tell you, what are you doing for a living that you can afford $1,900 in rent, meaning that you're throwing it away? You're not building equity. $1,900 into a house payment is one thing because you're building equity. Who has that? Is it a mindset or is it people making so much money they don't know what to do with it? What is that? What's that about?
Well, there are roommate situations. There are a lot of people in finance. You know, you've got somewhere around 16,000 Bank of America employees, 20,000 or so Wells Fargo employees, a lot of the other finance and fintech industries. So there are people who can afford that. But I think what you're seeing in addition to concessions and free rent, you're also seeing developers really tout these amenities when they do the walkthrough. They'll point to, you know, here's the bocce ball court, here's the fire pit, there's the massage room, there's your dog wash, there's the bike repair room. And when I talk to residents, a lot of them tell me, yeah, I used the yoga room once, but I've never used it again. So a lot of it is flashy amenities that maybe don't get used as much as people would expect.
And when I rented my first apartment, the only concession they offered was a popcorn machine at the pool, I think. That was it.
That actually sounds like a good one.
It was a good one. So seriously, you do all these surveys for builders and things like that. Is there a breaking point where people say, well, that's just too much for rent? If it were a mortgage payment, that'd be one thing, but I'm not paying that for rent, particularly if it's outside of New York City or Chicago or L.A.
Well, I think it's all your mindset and where you're at in your life. So, you know, if you're young and you have a roommate or, you know, you live with your partner, $1,900 if you don't have children or you're just taking your dog to the pet spa, that could be reasonable.
But off the air, we were just talking about a lot of reasons that millennials want to be in apartments is because there's a lack of a supply, which we talked about earlier, of starter homes to move into. So they might as well just stay put and rent. But if you're paying $1,900 a month for rent, why do you need a starter home?
Well, let me give you an example. In the neighborhood I live in Dilworth, love where I am. I'm a renter right now.
Okay.
The places that are newly built across the street from me where I live cost $500,000 and up for a modest townhouse. So for me right now, speaking as an elderly millennial, I love where I live, and to stay there, $500,000 is not a viable starter home.
But if you're spending $2,000 a month on rent, I'm just saying, people who are willing to do this, do they also have money to put money away for the down payment on a starter home or a second move-up style home that would cost them about $1,900 in a mortgage payment? Are you ever going to be able to put enough aside, or are your appetites for luxury units in a convenient, great place near a brewery going to keep you out of a house for the rest of your life?
Can't put a price on a pet spa.
And that's probably why we see an uptick in FHA loans. So you can go to the table with 3% down as compared to 20% down on a conventional.
Wow. Okay. So the amount of new homes are being built is relatively low. The starter rate is low. Apartment vacancy rate uptown, I'm told, is 21.8%. What are the vacancy rates outside the 277 loop? They're lower, much lower, considerably
much lower. Uptown is
because
kind of
in price?
No, Uptown has a lot of new inventory right now, several hundred to several thousand new apartments hitting the market in the last few years. Around town, actually, the vacancy rate is less than 7%. So about 93%+ of apartments are occupied. Mm-hmm. And that means that even if, you know, you're looking for an apartment from out of the market, there's not a ton that's available. And developers are confident that new apartments they build will get filled even at high prices.
Is this sustainable? Can this go on for any considerable amount of time? Does it have to go on? Because 44 people a day are moving here.
I think the apartment boom will go on, especially with the Lynx extension, the Blue Line extension. Most of the area around it, the quarter mile around it, is Todd A zoned. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be retail on the bottom, apartments on the top. You can get credits if you do affordable housing in it or more common open space to increase your height. So definitely along the Lynx Blue Line extension, we're going to see a lot more apartments popping
up. We're talking about this probably because this is changing the city. Oh, and we've talked about this in the past, Eli, that this building of apartments and condos and the townhomes that are going up right in front of the great big apartment complex at 277 and South Boulevard.
Camden.
Just jamming this stuff in on every square inch of land. We're talking about this because this is changing the way Charlotte looks and changing the way we have to navigate and plan our lives because it's increasing traffic and congestion, and it takes longer to go just about anywhere now because of this. If this were happening in a big city, we wouldn't even notice it because these buildings would have been here since before we were born. Is that essentially why this is so unfamiliar to us?
I think there's an element of truth to that. Charlotte is a newer city in many ways, and a lot of these shiny new buildings are new, but we're still relatively small. Mm-hmm. So 19,000 people coming to, say, the New York metro area.
Nothing.
Yes, would be absorbed very quickly, unnoticeable. 19,000 people coming to Mecklenburg County is still a sizable increase. And in a city that has so few large built-up areas and so many single-family suburban subdivisions, mm-hmm. you stick a few big buildings on some corners and you start to change the landscape really quickly compared to an older or more built-up area.
So earlier in this hour, when Jason Gentry was here from the Charlotte Realtors Association, he mentioned that baby boomers are not downsizing to the degree that they were prior to the recession, meaning that they've decided to stay where they are, maybe do a little remodeling in the home that they're in, make it a little more friendly to them or give them amenities that they could get if they move, but they don't need to move. They're fine where they are. But at the same time, Jennifer, they are building these adult communities. Active adult communities. And they have to use those words because you can't say by law, I don't think, no children, no families, only people who are old.
It sounds better than age restricted.
And they're usually 55-plus communities. Are they successful? Are people wanting to move into those?
Definitely. So in 2014, we had 145 starts in age-restricted communities, active adult communities. This past year, we've had the top three out of the top five selling subdivisions in Charlotte have been active adult. So Treetops by Lennar, mm-hmm. number one selling subdivision in Charlotte
really?
Is active adult. So they averaged 194 starts.
And
last
how
year.
Is what they're doing different from what any other building or builder is doing in any other non-active adult neighborhood?
So these communities are gated normally, and they're highly amenitized. So, you know, the landscape's taken care of, yard maintenance done. It's a lock and leave community. You have restaurants on site. You have private wine cellars. You have pools, spas, workout rooms. Trilogy Lake Norman is a good example of this up in Lincoln County, too. It's a new active adult gated community. They came in fourth for starts this past year.
And there's one in Fort Mill, too.
Yeah, that's Del Webb's Carolina yeah. Orchards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So these are what you're describing to me is high-end condominium living, but you're in a single-family home.
Right. The lots are really small. So lots average about 5,000 to 7,000 square feet. So you are side by side. But the way that they design the home, it doesn't feel like that when you're in it, because the side that you're abutting somebody, there's no windows. So
well, it's low maintenance too. You're not responsible really for the for the outside, and that would be that would be appealing to me at 20. So why aren't they all doing that? Why isn't that attractive to a millennial? I would be very attractive if you're.
That's why we live in the apartments.
That's right. Exactly right.
I love not doing yard work.
So why aren't all builders just saying it's no maintenance? You just come in and live in the house, and we'll take care of the painting outside and the cutting of the grass and the shrubs, etc.
We're seeing them do that. So a lot of builders, Toll Brothers for one, H&H Homes, Lennar, they're coming out with a millennial-based product, which mirrors the active adult product pretty much.
Cool.
So they all have the open floor plans for entertaining, same ideas.
What does that do to the price?
They're all really expensive.
Okay. Plus there's a condo fee or a
homeowner's association fee. Correct.
In a totally unrelated development, we are seeing something. It's a new phenomenon, something emerging here, where one company is coming in and building neighborhoods of new homes, but they're not for sale. They're only rental units. Yikes. Is that a good thing?
Well, this is a spinoff of what happened in the wake of the recession when several Wall Street-backed companies like American Homes for Rent, Invitation Homes, Tricon purchased thousands of houses, single-family houses that had previously been owner-occupied and turned them into rentals. In Charlotte, they've bought about 10,000 of these, many of them out of foreclosure. Many of them are in that starter home bracket. So they've taken these houses permanently off the market, and they're finding it's so profitable for them to rent them out that they think it'll be profitable to build new houses that are designed for rent forever. So you have Invitation Homes, one of these companies, building a 79-lot subdivision called Evans Woods. Their plan is for it to be permanently rental. Mm-hmm. And they think that that will be more profitable for them in the long term. Although, of course, if it doesn't work out, they can always sell them.
What does it do to the character of neighborhoods? Do they maintain them pretty well to make sure that the yards are being kept up and the houses are being painted? And
so a lot of these, there's single-family REITs that are doing it. American Homes for Rent is one, Invitation. So they have they do the yard maintenance for you. They'll put the irrigation on one system. So it's all taken care of.
What does it do to the value of homes in surrounding neighborhoods?
I feel like before when they were going on the MLS, what they were doing is they were finding properties on the MLS, doing all cash offers, which is why it's so hard to – you have to come with your highest and best right now because you have cash offers from these institutional investors. But there's deed restrictions in a lot of communities where you can only have so many homes for rent in a community at a certain time.
I think there's been a really big shift in Mecklenburg County that a lot of people haven't realized. Before the recession, we're somewhere around 36% renters. Now we're around 44% renters. Mm-hmm. This is a community where almost half the people here rent. And I think we have a lot of advocacy, protection, concerns over homeowners and home values, and we don't have that as much over renters. But almost half of our households here in Mecklenburg County are renter-occupied now.
So Bobby on Twitter says, how big of a role have private equity firms, this is what we're talking about here, played in driving up costs of houses? Because didn't they buy up everything after tanking of the economy? What has it done to the price of a house?
Well, they bought about 2.5% of the houses in Mecklenburg County, for example, and that's a lot. But it's still a small slice of the market. Where I think they really had the biggest impact was they took a lot of those lower-priced single-family starter homes off the market with all cash offers very quickly. Mm-hmm. So they restricted the tightest part of the market even further and basically took that stuff permanently off the market.
And Stacy on Facebook writes, I'm a Charlotte native, purchased a house last year. It was really difficult to find a home with a nice lot of land. All of the newly built homes in the city have such small lots. Having land and a nice yard is important to me. Is that still going to be important, or is that a trend that's simply not going to be sustainable because we're running out of room?
Unfortunately, the lot sizes are shrinking. So, you know, it's based on your price range. So Union County, you can get a 90-foot lot, which is considered large. Anywhere up to half an acre. Mm-hmm. But really, in Mecklenburg County, you're looking at a quarter of an acre on average.
Jennifer Gooch is Regional Director of Charlotte Metro Study. They study all this for business concerns. And Eli Portillo is a business and development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Earlier in the program, Jason Gentry was here, who's the president of the Realtor of the Charlotte Regional Realtors Association. Wow. Thank you all for the hour. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having
us. Thanks for having me.